You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 16th of March 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got some British news to look at today and it concerns racist artificial intelligence. And it seems every time they use artificial intelligence or algorithms that are basically completely unbiased. I mean, how could prejudices be built into these things? And they always show a discrepancy between the races. And that is because there are differences between the races. And this one here is based on there being physical differences. The UK government is using a racially biased online passport photo checker, despite an updated version being available for more than a year. Her Majesty's Passport Office has confirmed an improved version of the facial detection system, developed by its software vendor, has still not been rolled out. The facial detection system is part of the UK government's online passport application service, which lets Brits apply for, renew, replace, or update their passport and pay for it online. The technology informs people when it thinks a photo uploaded for a passport may not meet strict requirements. But this has been shown to lead to racist mistakes. I mean, how can something that is basically just a bit of software that is just looking for if people have correctly photographed themselves, how can that be discriminating against anyone? How can that be accused of hating the colour of the skin? It's just basically because the races are different. We'll see that as we hear what was going on here. Users of colour have received messages saying it looks like your mouth is open based on the size of their lips, as well as other messages like it looks like your eyes are closed and we can't find the outline of your head due to their skin colour. Well, if you're going to have people with a darker skin colour, obviously it's going to be harder to detect their features. I mean, this was a problem for a long time with photography, particularly when you had black and white newspapers and they would show a black and white picture of a person of colour and there really would be no definition whatsoever. It would just look like a black blob. I mean, I can recall seeing Phil Lynott in a black and white newspaper. I used to be a bit of a fan of Thin Lizzy. And just remembering thinking how odd he looked because it was a black and white picture. And I guess that was just the same for all black people when you look at pictures from years ago. Today, when they use them in television and in Hollywood, they have these massive megawatt lights that they blast at them from all different angles so that they can actually see the features. And it's just a fact of life. Black, the colour black, you really can't see much definition in it. You really can't see many features in it. You have to have a light colour to get any definition. So, of course, if you're going to have a technology that is telling you whether a picture is up to the correct standard or not, it's going to tell people with dark skin that their pictures are not up to the correct standard more often. And the way to sort this out is simply to design software for black people and design software for white people, because obviously if the software is going to work for whites and then you use it for blacks, it's going to say to blacks, well, it looks like your eyes are closed or we can't actually see the outline of your head. And if the software is created correctly to function with black people, then it's not going to function properly with white people, is it? In such a simple solution here, you should basically have different software for black people that you have for whites. And we can extend this to everything. Everything should be racially based. There is no one size fits all. When you think about the different proportions that people have, black people have completely different proportions to white people. Blacks have long legs and short midriffs, and white people have long midriffs and short legs. And yet we have this one size fits all in the clothing range. And what it basically means is clothes don't fit people at all, because you cannot fit somebody with a one size fits all, because we have different proportions. We have different forms. And obviously we have different faces, different features to our face. So you end up with the artificial intelligence insulting black people and saying, oh, it looks like your mouth is open, and it's based on the size of their lips, because of course they have different lips to white people. And if it was going to say, if it was going to be based on blacks, and it would then say, well, this picture looks okay because the lip size fits, then with the white people, it's going to say, it looks like your mouth is open. It looks like you've got your mouth wide open, is what it's going to say to white people. You cannot please both different people groups with one piece of software. You should have to decide which type of software you wish to use. Kind of like if you're deciding which language you want to use on a cash machine. I don't see what is so much of a problem with this, or how it is that they can accuse a piece of software of hating somebody for the colour of their skin. The technology was known to have difficulty with very light or very dark skin tones, but officials decided it worked well enough before it went live in 2016. And in February 2020, Her Majesty's Passport Office said it had worked with the vendor of the tool on improvements. At the time, the unnamed vendor was performing its own tests on the update before Her Majesty's Passport Office would conduct its own testing. Rolling out the updated software as part of the online passport application service was due to be the next step, but this was likely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, according to New Scientist. So it wasn't the racist passport office, it was COVID-19. And another aspect of this, where it's difficult to actually work out the features of black people with photography, we have the same problem with facial recognition. When they were doing facial recognition tests outside sports arenas and in London last year, or it may have been the year before, they discovered that the facial recognition didn't work with black people. It worked with whites, but it didn't work with blacks. And effectively, it meant that black people were safe to walk past this without being picked up on it and having all their details scanned, and white people were not. So effectively, if this technology had been used, it would have meant lots of white criminals would have been caught, but it wouldn't have been able to be used for catching black criminals. Of course, they still accused it of being racist, but in actual fact, it was being anti-white. It was going after white people, and not identifying the black criminals that walked past. It has already been well documented, the issues people of colour have had to face when attempting to use the passport system. Last year, student Elaine Owuzu, 22, from London, was wrongly told her mouth appeared open on 5 different photos she tried to use. She claimed the error is evidence of systemic racism. How can this be evident of systemic racism? Another solution to this would be for black people to develop their own software for detecting the features of black people. Why haven't they done that? Why haven't they developed their own software for their own people that would do this? Why are they expecting white people to develop it for them? Why are they expecting white people to develop a one-size-fits-all piece of software? You would think if they are the ones that are having an issue with this, then they are the ones that should come up with a solution for it. Is that not logical? Miss Owuzu told the BBC, "If the algorithm can't read my lips, it is a problem with the system and not with me." And that is quite correct. It is a problem with the system. But what they should do is design two systems, one for blacks and one for whites. But of course, then it would still be accused of being racist, wouldn't it? It would be accused of digital apartheid because there were two different technologies to use, one for whites and one for blacks. But there are two different peoples, more than two different peoples in this world. It's just a fact of biological reality. And when you use software like this, it is going to identify that there are differences between the peoples, and it's going to affect the way that the software works. In 2019, Joshua Badder, a black man from West London, had hoped to renew his passport online, but he was stunned when the automated photo checker mistook his big lips for an open mouth. When asked by the system if he wanted to submit the photo anyway, Mr. Badder was forced to explain why in a comment box, writing, "My mouth is closed. I just have big lips." And of course, compared to other black people, I'm sure he didn't have big lips. We say big lips, but if you're black, they're not big lips, are they? They're just normal lips. If you're black and you look at white people, you say, well, white people have got small lips. And it's so obvious that there are these physical differences between the peoples, and they're there for a reason. They're there so that we can differentiate between different peoples. Form is intimately connected to function. If something has a different form, then it always has a different function. These people look different to us because they are different to us, and artificial intelligence identifies that. Joshua used a high-quality photo booth image to apply for his passport with a digital code that he had to enter on gov.uk. "When I saw it, I was a bit annoyed, but it didn't surprise me," Mr. Badder said. "It is a problem that I have faced on Snapchat with the filters, where it hasn't quite recognised my mouth, obviously because of my complexion and just the way my features are." Well, he sounds fairly sensible, doesn't he? He's actually being sensible here. He's not accusing the software of being racist. He's just saying, well, there is this problem. It doesn't recognise my mouth because of my complexion. He says, "After I posted it online, friends started getting in contact with me saying it's funny, but it shouldn't be happening." Yeah, there should be an option for him to press to say he is a black man, not a white man, and therefore the parameters of the software should be changed to reflect that. Kat Hallam, an educational technologist from Staffordshire, also had problems with the system. She was told, "It looks like your eyes are closed and we can't find the outline of your head." Well, she probably didn't have enough background lighting there. That would have been the issue. I mean, this is the problem here. Black people are going to need more lighting, aren't they, in order to take a recognisable photograph than white people. And if you have the extra lighting on white people, then you're going to get the same problem, aren't you? That there's going to be too much light there for you to actually see any definition. I mean, it all comes down to this. One size does not fit all. When posting about the issue on Twitter at the time, the passport office tweeted back to her saying it was sorry the photo upload service hadn't worked as it should. In October 2019, it was revealed that the technology used in the online checking system was known to have difficulty with very light or very dark skin tones, but officials decided that it worked well enough. User research was carried out with a wide range of ethnic groups and did identify that people with very light or very dark skin found it difficult to provide an acceptable passport photograph, the department wrote. However, the overall performance was judged sufficient to deploy. Now, just thinking about this, in China, they use a lot of this facial recognition software. And it works very well. And the reason why it works very well is because China has a homogeneous country. So if they design something that is to work with a Chinese face, it is only ever going to be working on a Chinese face. And that's why it works so well. If you're in a multicultural country and you've got all different skin tones, all different features of the face, all different skull sizes, It just cannot be used in the same way that you would be able to use it if you had a homogeneous society like they do in China. Noel Sharkey, Professor of Artificial Intelligence and Robotics at the University of Sheffield, believes lack of diversity in the workplace and an unrepresentative sample of black people is one of the reasons why the error may have happened. Now, this is their answer to all of this. But if they had had more diversity in the workplace, what would that have meant? Well, it would have meant that they would have had a lower IQ in the workplace. That wouldn't have solved this problem, would it? If anybody there had suggested, well, why don't we develop some software for blacks and why don't we develop some software for whites, I'm sure they would have been accused of being a white supremacist and trying to introduce apartheid. But that would be the only way that you could fix this, because quite clearly, if it's going to work for black people, it's not going to work for whites, is it? And vice versa, which is why we have this problem. And they always say the solution is more diversity. We must bring more diversity in. But that just lowers the standards. Why doesn't Noel Sharkey get together with lots of other black people and develop software for this? Why haven't blacks solved this problem for themselves? He says, we know that it has problems with gender as well. It has a real problem with women too, generally, and if you are a black woman, you're screwed, he said. It's really bad, it's not fit for purpose, and I think it's time that people started recognizing that. And again, women have smaller faces. They do tend to look more similar to one another with the facial recognition. Men have more of a difference between them. And this is just a fact of life. It's just a fact of biology. He continues, people have been struggling for a solution for this in all sorts of algorithmic bias, not just face recognition, but algorithmic bias in decisions for mortgages, loans, and everything else. And it is still happening. Well, how can there be algorithmic bias? Well, there probably is an algorithmic bias, but it's not based on race, is it? I mean, if what they are doing is looking to see whether somebody is going to pay a mortgage back and they exclude the sort of people that default on loans and that don't earn that much money, I bet they find that a lot of the people that default on loans and don't earn that much money are going to be black, aren't they? Because we have a very high black unemployment rate. So the fact will be that these algorithms have excluded them for their behavior, and yet they will assume that they've been excluded because of the color of their skin, even though when you are filling out forms for mortgages and loans, obviously that can't actually see what the skin color is. So he's really being economic with the truth here. He's saying there's all sorts of algorithmic bias, and obviously he's implying that that means it's racist. But there is supposed to be an algorithmic bias there for mortgages and loans and all that sort of thing. That's the point of actually having it. The Race Equality Foundation said it believes the system was not tested properly to see if it would actually work for black or ethnic minority people, calling it technological or digital racism. And that really shows you about the level of intelligence of the Race Equality Foundation, doesn't it? If they think that this is some built-in hatred of a skin colour, when it's just basic science, isn't it? You know, if you've got black and white, one of those colours is very dark and it's very difficult to actually see the features. And if you have white, that is very light and it's very easy to see the features. It's just a fact of life. It is nothing to do with skin hate. He says, presumably there was a process behind developing this type of technology which did not address issues of race, ethnicity. And as a result, it disadvantages black and minority ethnic people, said Samir Jeraj, the charity's policy and practice officer. And again, the only way that they could actually address the issues of race and ethnicity with this would be to develop different settings for the detection thing, so that you could say whether you were black or whether you were white. I mean, really, you would need to have Chinese, you would need to have Indian, non-white. You would have to have different for everybody, because otherwise it's just not going to work for everyone, is it? Everybody is going to have a problem with this software if they try to make it fit everyone. And this is a problem that they've had for years now, that they have failed to actually solve, even though it would be very simple to solve it. In a 2018 study titled Gender Shades, a team of researchers discovered that popular facial recognition services from Microsoft, IBM, and Face Plus can discriminate based on gender and race. Really, it's discriminating, or is it just coming up with a different result based on whether you what gender or race you are, for the reasons that I've already set out? The data set was made up of 1,270 photos of parliamentarians from three African nations and three Nordic countries where women held positions. The faces were selected to represent a broad range of human skin tones using a labelling system developed by dermatologists called the Fitzpatrick Scale. All three services worked better on white male faces and had the highest error rates on dark-skinned males and females. Well, I bet if you were to do this, not on people, but to do it on, I don't know, trees that you had coloured in black and trees that you had coloured in a light colour, I bet the trees that coloured in black, you wouldn't be able to see so much detail on them as well as on the trees that have been coloured in a light colour. I mean, that's what this is based on. It's just based on reality. It's not based on racism and hatred of skin colours. It's just based on the fact that white is a light colour and black is a dark colour. Microsoft was unable to detect darker-skinned females 21% of the time, while IBM and Face Plus wouldn't work on darker-skinned females in roughly 35% of the cases. And it's just simply because they couldn't actually see the details, because if everything was completely black, you wouldn't be able to see anything at all, would you? Just try closing your eyes and you can't see, can you? Because everything's black. I mean, it's just so basic, this, and yet they will scream that it's racism that is actually behind it. So what are they saying? The world is just inherently racist? Well, perhaps it is. We do have these different races. They are a biological fact. They are a part of nature. The races are as different from one another as we are as different from one another as individuals. And yet our whole society seems to be based around going against that fact of life. And in doing so, it causes so many problems for us. This could just so easily be solved by just having different software for the different races. Well, to finish up with another news story here, we were talking yesterday in Real Britannia about this vigil for Sarah Everard that took place over the weekend, and how the police actually arrested four of these feminists. And we pointed out that they were breaking the lockdown legislation. They were breaking the COVID rules, which say that no more than two people are allowed to protest. And the feminists were all on BBC News yesterday screaming about how badly they had been treated, how this was a peaceful vigil, and how the police dared to arrest them. And of course, there's footage from there of them all chanting F the police, no justice, no peace. So they were quite obviously anti the police. It looked like a protest. It certainly didn't look like a vigil. And now a police federation chief has confirmed this. A police federation chief has defended the actions of officers at the vigil for Sarah Everard and claimed the event had been hijacked by Antifa, Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion protesters. Now, normally what happens is, if it's Black Lives Matter, nobody gets arrested. And that's what the point here is, I think. The police, instead of going on their earlier procedures that they had from last summer, which was, if it's a Black Lives Matter protest, then don't arrest anyone and just pretend it's peaceful. But where this protest started out as being a vigil for Sarah Everard, I guess they weren't aware that the Black Lives Matter were there, and they should have just been hands off. And of course, this is why Sadiq Khan criticised them. This is why there have been these calls for Cresta Dick to stand down, because you're not supposed to arrest Black Lives Matter. You're supposed to just allow them to do whatever it is they want to do. Ken Marsh, chairman of the Metropolitan Police Federation, said that 90% of those at the Clapham Common vigil on Saturday had walked away before it became a rally in breach of the lockdown. Police faced heavy criticism and the Met's commissioner Dame Cresta Dick was under pressure to resign after officers were seen manhandling women at the event. But of course, we have seen this again and again and again with these anti-lockdown protests. We've seen elderly pensioners being manhandled by the police. It's only now that it was actually a Black Lives Matter event here and this happened that we see the complaints. Mr. Marsh says the peaceful vigil had been infiltrated by Antifa, Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion demonstrators, and officers had been punched, spat at and abused at the event. 26 of my colleagues were abused, spat at or punched, Mr. Marsh told the Telegraph. One black female officer was racially abused. An individual was arrested. This is unfortunately what happens with things like this. They get hijacked. Now, we weren't told about this at the weekend, were we? We weren't told 26 police were abused, spat at or punched. We were told this was just a peaceful vigil. And these four women that were arrested, they were just peacefully there mourning the death of or the murder of Sarah Everard. And quite clearly, that wasn't what was happening. Footage from the vigil shows mourners packed together around floral tributes left for Miss Everard, with a number of demonstrators shouting, "No justice, no peace, F the police." And really, of course, when the police heard that, they should have realised it was Black Lives Matter and it should be hands off, and they should have just allowed them to do whatever they want to do. Because, of course, when the crowd is hostile to the police, then they have to leave them alone. When the crowd is pro-police, like the people that went to protest the vandalism of the statues and protest Black Lives Matter and how they want to defund the police, then the police are supposed to start cracking heads and clamping down really heavily on people. Of course, this is what we learned last year, wasn't it? After the Save the Statues protest, and Priti Patel called all the people that were there supportive of law and order. She called them all thugs. And Sadiq Khan was calling the Black Lives Matter protesters who rioted and looted and threw push bikes at mounted police women. He called them, what was it he called them, peaceful protesters. It was a wonderful thing to see. He certainly supported it. Anyway, one of the attendees stood next to the person filming had brought a megaphone. That's rather strange, isn't it? You wouldn't think of people bringing a megaphone to a candlelit vigil where you're supposed to be mourning for somebody. It was quite clearly a demonstration, and the law is that you can't have more than two people at a demonstration. Demonstrators marched through the streets of London for the second night on Monday, with crowds gathering in Parliament Square outside New Scotland Yard before briefly blocking traffic on Westminster Bridge, amidst growing pressure on the government to tackle violence against women. And this was an open Black Lives Matter protest, and of course, there were no arrests. Boris Johnson has now unveiled plans to place plainclothes police officers in nightclubs, whilst also spending £45 million on improving streetlights and CCTV coverage to better protect women, after thousands took to the streets demanding action to protect women from predators. And how would this have saved Sarah Everard? I don't think any of that would have actually saved Sarah Everard. The biggest problem that we have in Britain is with young girls being groomed and raped, I thought. They told us it was up to a million young white girls that had actually happened to. And we see nothing that's actually been put in place to protect them. We don't see the plainclothes police outside the schools keeping an eye out for Muslims with young white girls, gangs of Muslims with young white girls. Of course, if they were to do that, they would be accused of being Islamophobic, wouldn't they? And it's interesting that we see these protests about the mistreatment of women, and we're seeing the same thing in South America. We see the same thing in Thailand. There's obviously a big drive at the moment to highlight this. And before the advent of feminism, when it was one man, one woman, and you would be married for the whole of your life, we never heard of any of this. We never heard of women being snatched off the street. We never heard of grooming gangs. Women were never fearful for their lives. Women would have doors opened for them. They would have men put their coats on the ground so that they didn't get their feet wet walking over puddles. Women used to be really looked after and protected and cherished. But they weren't happy with that, were they? They said that they wanted to be in the world of men. They said that they were being oppressed by being looked up to like that and being looked after like that. And then we end up with a situation that we are in today, where thousands of them have to go out on the streets to say, we are not safe on our streets. And why are they not safe on our streets? Well, they're not safe on our streets because, as I say, the advent of feminism. They're not safe on the streets because of the immigration policies of our government that invited people in that had very negative views of women compared to the European views of women. They're not safe on the streets because they're encouraged to compete with one another to see who can be the best at manipulating men into getting free drinks out of them and whatever else it is that they want to get out of men. If you think back 70 or 80 years ago, women had a national costume that they would wear. They certainly wouldn't be showing their flesh to anyone because they understood that that would be distracting to a man, and it might the worst type of men, it might encourage them to do things that they would rather they didn't do. You know, we used to have respect for the other gender. Men used to have respect for women, and women used to have respect for men. And it's very sad that that is all gone. And we have a lot of very, very badly behaved men. And we also have a lot of very, very badly behaved women. And putting plainclothes police outside pubs is not going to solve that. This is a systemic problem. It's not systemic racism. It's a systemic problem with our morals, because we've turned our back on our traditional morality, and this is where it ends up, unfortunately. Well, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.